Welcome to In the Studio with a 21st century perspective on history's greatest rock album.
You're welcome.
Guitar up.
One, two, three.
I'm Redbeard, and today we go in the studio for the album that made an international superstar out of Bryan Adams.
I always wanted to make a record that had a duet on it, that had a song from a film, that had a really good ballad, that has sort of amalgamated a lot of ideas that I've been working on over the years. And I guess Reckless was that record. Hi, this is Bryan Adams in the studio for Reckless.
In 1984, Bryan Adams found himself perched on the edge of a rock and roll plateau. His third album, Cuts Like a Knife, had cracked the American top 20 in sales, and thanks to MTV, Bryan's face was as well known as his rough-hewn voice. Everybody knew that if Bryan Adams was to break through to the upper echelons of rock stardom, his next album was the one that would do it. But that kind of pressure, those kinds of expectations, have crushed many a promising career. And there must have been those who wondered whether a nice guy like Bryan Adams, at the time only 24 years old, could stand up to the test. It was November of 1984 when Bryan Adams answered the questions and ended the doubts with the release of Reckless, an album that produced 6 top 20 singles, one song that went all the way to number 1. The Reckless album ended up selling more than 12 million copies. It made Bryan Adams, the diplomat's son from Vancouver, Canada, into one of the hottest performers in the world. But Bryan, typically modest, says he wasn't thinking about any of that when he started working on the album Reckless in the spring of 1984.
The thing about this album is that it was really a combined effort between myself and Jim, the songwriters, my band, and Bob and myself producing the record. It was like one big brain. Everybody was thinking the same thing at the same time. And that's what made this record work. Everyone was pulling in the same direction. When you make a record, you don't actually think you're making a hit record. I mean, you want to hope that you want people to like your music. But when we were recording Reckless, I never thought that it would ever do what it did. And it's just as simple as that.
Found out about you and I.
Bryan Adams' album Reckless. That's called Run to You, which made it to number 6 on the singles chart in January 1985. Bryan says that he originally wrote Run to You to be done by Blue Oyster Cult, and they turned it down. Like all the songs on Reckless, Run to You was co-written by Bryan and his friend Jim Vallance, who's been writing together starting in 1977. And like many of Jim and Bryan's songs, Run to You was built around a simple but unforgettable guitar riff.
It's a good riff, yeah, I like it. I don't remember what made me think of it, but there was a combination of Jimmy and I sitting down and just mulling over it and coming up with something we liked. All I remember thinking about when I wrote the song was I better say something different in the second chorus, so I said instead of I'm going to run all night, I said I'm going to stay all night. But I like the triangle that happens in that song. There's, you know, a guy who is infatuated with somebody, but is actually living or is actually in love with somebody else. And that actually never really happened to me, but I still love the idea of it, you know. Just the touch of a new lover, you know, there's something about that. It's just a simple song, you know. But I remember cutting, after I cut the track of this, I remember falling super in love with it and just, there was a certain magic on tape that only way I can describe it to you is I went in after we cut that first take and I tried to cut it again and again and again to try and get a better feel, and nothing matched the original feeling of the first performance. And that's what's great about having tape rolling at all times. And that's one thing that's great about Bob. No matter what happens in the studio, the record button's always down in case something magical happens, which is actually very clever. She's only happy when she's dancing. Jimmy came to Europe with me in I guess late 83, and we wrote some of the lyrics for this in Amsterdam when we were sitting there. with nothing to do one afternoon. The whole idea of somebody that works 9 to 5 and wants to get out of that 9 to 5 business and just can't wait for that weekend situation where she can go wild.
In April of 1985, the song called Somebody peaked at number 11.
Some sort of signature feel which we'd played with. And I remember when we were writing one day, that there were a lot of things that we put down onto a cassette and just left it and never went back to it and listened to it. And one day Jim phoned me up and said, "Man, do you remember this thing?" And he played it with me over the telephone. I said, "Oh, yeah, yeah." He said, "We should finish that." And so we did. And all we had really was the chorus and a couple of chord changes for the verse. And so we spent one day and finished the song. But luckily, the tape was rolling. Otherwise, the song would have been forgotten forever. Because that's why we always have a cassette machine going when we're writing. No matter, even if we're sitting and talking, we have a cassette machine on hand so we can just roll tape.
Looking for
That's Brian Adams with Somebody from the Reckless album. Up next, we hear a song originally written for a movie that became Brian Adams' first number one song. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and you can certainly find a whole lot from Brian here at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Brian Adams for the Reckless.
Hi, this is Brian Adams for the anniversary. I can't believe that. The anniversary of Reckless in the studio.
Thanks, Brian. I'm Redbeard. The song called Heaven wasn't originally intended for a Brian Adams album. Brian and Jim Vallance first wrote the song for the soundtrack of a movie that you may have never seen called A Night in Heaven. I asked Brian if the plot of the film had anything to do with the lyrics of the song.
No, we actually hadn't even seen the film or heard anything about it. I was asked to write a song for a film, and it was A&M's film, so we sat down and wrote the song. And it happened, this song happened very, very quickly. I mean, Jimmy and I sitting together, I had a microphone, he had a piano, and we sat down and we wrote and we tried singing ideas and passing stuff back and forth, and finally it just happened.
Thinking about all our younger years, there was only you and me. We were young and wild and free. Now nothing can take you away from me. We've been down that road before, but that's over now. You keep me coming.
Which in June 1985 became Brian Adams' first million-selling single and also his first song to hit number one. It has since become a prom night standard, as Brian is well aware.
People used to write me letters and just say, we're using this song for our grad, or we're using this song for our wedding, and you know, can you come? It's funny. And there was a guy in New York that played this song to death on the radio there, and I remember going there one day, and he said to me, you know, man, I played this song the day it came out. I knew the song was going to do good. And I guess it was the faith of people on radio that made me convince me that it was going to be a good song to put on the record. And it's a really nice ballad.
And the irony is that if the film A Night in Heaven had been a bigger hit film, then the song called Heaven might never have been saved for the Reckless album.
I like the idea of looking back, you know, nostalgically about when you were young, and they have all the things, crazy things you used to do when we were young and wild and free. And I thought that was a great way of opening up the song, especially when, you know, if you're a bit older and you've had a chance to look back and say, oh yeah, I remember those days, those were great. And a lot of that's what Summer 69 is about too, nostalgia, about looking back on the old times as good times. And I like that.
Got my first real six string, bought it at the Five and Dime. Played it till my fingers bled. Was the summer of 69. Me and some guys from school had a band and we tried real hard. Jimmy quit, Jody got married. Should've known we'd never get far.
Song Summer of 69, it made it to number 5 in the charts in August of 1985. By that time, Bryan Adams' visibility was as high as it had ever been. A month earlier, Bryan had been one of the featured performers at Live Aid, appearing before millions of television viewers around the world.
I remember seeing a review about Summer 69. The guy says, it's probably a landmark song for Bryan Adams, but it's not true. but he's wrong. It is true. I mean, I remember going, all the lyrics in the song are relevant. The only thing about it that's a metaphor is the song title. I mean, it can be about any time. I mean, the original title for Summer 69 was Best Days of My Life. And we'd always played around with writing a song called The Summer of 42 or The Summer of 88 or whatever. And we decided we'd choose 69 for a lot of reasons. One was it was the year the Beatles broke up. It was the year Woodstock. It was the year men went to the moon. It was a great year for a lot of reasons. It was a cultural revolution. It was the end of a decade. It was the opening of a new decade. It was the time when we were first introduced to music. There were a lot of things about that year that made it relevant. And of course, the sexual connotations of 69. The story about a guy who buys his guitar and plays it to the point where his fingers bleed. I mean, if you're a guitar player, when you first get your guitar, I mean, it's tough pressing your fingers on the strings. So that's what happens if you're fanatic.
Coming up next, Brian Adams talks duetting with Tina Turner, the Academy Awards, and a song that was left off the Reckless album that nevertheless became a big hit in England. For all this and more, visit InTheStudio.net. Follow In The Studio on Facebook and at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter. I am Redbeard with Brian Adams. You're in the studio for the number one album, Reckless.
Hi, this is Brian Adams for the anniversary. I can't believe that. The anniversary of Reckless in the studio.
Yeah, buddy, time flies when you're Brian Adams. I'm Redbeard. By spawning no less than 6 top 20 hits, including the number one song, Heaven, the album Reckless went to number one in sales as well. Worldwide sales of Reckless has topped 12 million and ignited a songwriting and recording career that is an incredible 55 million plus. Staggering when you realize that the Reckless album was released on Brian Adams' 25th birthday.
I don't really think about the whole sort of album sale thing. I don't really pay attention to it, and I'm only into this for making music. And it's a great opportunity for me to reinvent and to keep changing. And I don't want to sit still. I'm as excited about making music today as I was when I first started. And
And I'm into it for music. I'm not into it for the glamour or the celebrity or the, you know, I love writing songs and I love going on tour with my band and that's what I do. And it, you know, the fact that it's become an international success has a lot to do with the fact that I got involved in some film work.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, if you imagine the music business to be the size of your thumbnail, then the film business is the size of your hand. You know, it's such an immense, it has branches to places you wouldn't even imagine. So everyone loves a movie. And so what happened is, you know, by being involved in that, I was able to play around the world. I mean, in places I could never have imagined. I mean, from everywhere from South Korea to the Philippines to Vietnam, the whole Asian area, to India, to the Middle East, to South Africa, into South America, around the world. And so when you talked earlier about the whole idea of being a small world, well, when you have to do 24-hour flights, let me tell you, man, it's a big world.
Does the medium of film get into places in the world that even rock music doesn't?
Yes, it does. And I love being involved in the film world because I think it's a great opportunity, again, to challenge myself musically. Every time I've done something in film, it's always been quite different, and it's brought out something else in my writing that I didn't know I could do. So I hope to do more of it. And yeah, I mean, we've been nominated 3 times for Academy Awards, so it's a good reason to stick with it.
I guess so.
Reaching out.
Featuring the melodic soaring guitar solo of Keith Scott, that's Brian Adams on One Night Love Affair from the number one album, Reckless.
Tell me about your relationship with Keith and why it's lasted. Obviously, there's got to be even more than a musical bond here.
Well, we met in Toronto in 1976, and we were sort of in rival bands at the time, and we went and had a cup of tea, and we had a talk about music, and a couple of years later, when I was putting my album together and my first sort of touring band, I called him, and he came out with me, and the only way I can really describe what it's like to have sort of a friend, a brother, if you like, to have working with you for such a long time, is the other night we were talking about going on tour again, and I was like, oh, going on tour. I was just dreading the idea of going out again. And I looked at the sort of, you know, 2 or 3 month schedule on it. And then Keith walked in the room, and I thought to myself, you know, that's the reason why I go. I said, Keith, you know, man, when I see you, now I want to go out. I said, until you walked in the room, I was ready to go home. So, you know, there's a reason why we still play together as a band. The whole band I have has been together for a long time. And, you know, we don't have a name for the band like the Heartbreakers or the E Street Band or something like that. Maybe we should be called the Dudes of Leisure. But we've been together a long time. And that, you know, Keith isn't the only guy. Mickey Curry plays drums with me a long time. You know, we've all been together. And I've been quite loyal to a lot of people in my business, whether it's Bob Clearmountain, who does their mixing, or the songwriters I've worked with. You know, I like the idea of staying.
Personal manager.
My personal manager, who we've been together since I was 18. So, you know, it's about a brotherhood. It's not about sort of flitting and flattening around all over the place. You know, I'm comfortable with the people I met, and I stick with them.
It's a pity that many rock critics and certain American rock radio programmers are notoriously disloyal. Just look at the superstar careers of Elvis Presley, Elton John, Rod Stewart, Sting, Phil Collins, even Bruce Springsteen. Their music, after they became superstars, was either panned or, even worse, simply ignored by rock's gatekeepers.
How important at this stage of your career is rock and roll credibility?
Well, I don't really know about credibility. I just know about music, and this is about music. And so when someone calls me up and says, hey, you know, do you fancy coming out and singing, you know, it could be Tina Turner, or it could be Bonnie Raitt, or it could be Barbara Streisand, or it could be I don't know. If it seems like something that would be musically challenging, I'm normally quite interested in it. And you know, I've had some pretty high moments in my life singing with people. And you know, one of my highest moments was singing with Smokey Robinson at the Apollo Theater back a few years ago. It wasn't a record, but it was a TV show. And I suppose, you know, if you can walk into a world that is unfamiliar and make it seem like your own for a moment, then I think you've accomplished something. And I'm into this for music. I'm not sure about, I don't know, it's a fickle world about whether you're credible or not. And at the end of the day, if you feel comfortable making music because it's what inspires you, then that's what you should do. It's not about trying to garner up an image. It's about garnering up. It's about making music. And that's what you have to keep reminding yourself. It's only music. It's not, this isn't rocket science. It's just music, man. So if it turns you on and it excites you and it's challenging, and I mean, you have to remember that it is a little bit about challenging yourself too. I mean, I did this thing a few years ago, which was madness. I went and sang with an opera singer called Luciano Pavarotti, mm-hmm. And Eric Clapton was on it. U2 was on it before that. And you know, I stepped on stage and sang in Italian on live television. But it's only because I was challenged by the idea of it. And life is about creating yourself little challenges. Otherwise, things can get kind of dull. And I brought my dad along with me, and we had a fantastic time in Italy, and we sang, and we ate great pasta, and we had a great time. And it's one of the most memorable moments of my life. But it's, again, the reason what was great about it was it was music. It was about making music.
Yeah! For the first time I saw
That's a great fun song that was recorded during the Reckless Sessions, but it didn't fit on the vinyl record back then, which nevertheless became a hit single in England because of its subject, Princess Diana, then of the royal family.
Have you ever written and released a song you later regretted?
Well, no. Not really.
What about Diana? You know, you can't believe, I thought of you when she passed. I thought of you the next day.
Yeah, well, that was a frightful thing. And I'd actually become quite good friends with her over the years.
Really?
And she'd written me a very nice letter about the song. And so I was quite glad that I'd had a chance to play it for her and get her feedback on it. So it was a horrible thing to have happened because I felt as though I really lost a friend.
Oh, well, I'm so glad that you
made... In fact, I did lose a friend.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you were able to make that connection, because the last time I asked you about the song, this would have been 1988, I don't think you had yet met or
No, we had met. We had met a few times.
Oh, really?
But generally, they were with Prince Charles, and it was always at a benefit, so I couldn't really sit down and have a chat with her about it. But we'd met a few times, and it was fun to talk about.
Reviving a long-storied career about that time was Tina Turner, and Bryan Adams had written a song that Bryan felt that she could help him fully realize.
I had sent a tape down to them. It was about a three-month lapse before I even heard anything from anybody about this. And I phoned my manager one day. I said, Bruce, would you just call them and see if they're still interested in doing this? Because Tina's coming through town. She was supporting Lionel Richie at the time. And I thought, well, you know. So she was coming through town, and we got another tape of the song to her. And we got word back that she'd like to meet me. So I went backstage the concert, and there was a big room of people. You know, it's like you've been backstage, 50 people. There's a big room of people, and Tina walked in the room. She looked around. She had the cassette in her hand, and she walked through all the people right to me, and she goes, I gotta sing this song. She's such a great singer. I mean, working with her is such a pleasure because no matter what you say to her, she understands as a singer because she can translate her persona onto tape. She just, if that makes any sense at all. She's got a very vibrant personality, and she's a fabulous vocalist. So it was very easy to work with her, and she was willing to try whatever it took to make this work. And so it took a couple hours, and we went through it, and we finally got something that was pretty good. But it wasn't until the mix down that it all came together. It wasn't until the mix that we finally placed everything in the right perspective and used the harmony and switched lines and made some sense out of it.
You're welcome.
That's Tina Turner, duetting with Bryan Adams on the number one album, Reckless. I'm Redbeard, back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my buddy, Bryan Adams. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2014, all rights reserved. Transcription, Jane Carpenter Brunet. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter. And for this and much more, visit inthestudio.net.